Welcome to the Jones Zone, a podcast by Daryl and JJ Jones, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. Your host, Daryl Jones, a top Orange County real estate agent, has been supporting homeowners for over 30 years. He is here to share his tips and advice, as well as insights from industry experts, to help you take your real estate game to the next level. Now, here's your host, Daryl Jones.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Jones Zone. I appreciate everybody watching. Today, we're going to talk about 1031 tax deferred exchanges. We've got an expert in Mike Arbach joining us. And welcome, Mike. I appreciate you joining me and doing this favor for us and educating the public about 1031 exchanges. How long have you been working with 1031 exchanges?
Yeah, so I've been with the company a little bit over 6 months. I'm one of the partners here. You know, our whole thing is we're trying to mass educate people about 1031 exchanges and why it's a great tool to, you know, use to generate wealth in real estate.
Well, let's go ahead and dig right in. So tell us, what is a 1031 tax deferred exchange? In fact, I've been told you got to add that deferred word in there opposed to 1031 tax exchange. It's 1031 tax deferred exchange. But go ahead. What is a 1031?
Yeah, definitely. So simply put, Daryl, a 1031 exchange is a swap of one investment property for another property without paying a dime in tax. So, you know, I'm not sure if you're aware, but 1031 exchanges have been around the country, you know, for 100 years. They actually started in 1921, and it's been a tool that people have been using for a long time.
Awesome. So it's basically when, and tell us more. It's when an owner of an investment property sells that to buy another one, and let's say they bought it for $500 and they're selling it for $1 million. So typically, if they didn't do a 1031 tax deferred exchange on that scenario, basic math scenario, we won't take the closing cost into consideration yet, but that's a $500,000 gain that they would normally pay a capital gains tax. So what this does, it defers that capital gains tax for down the road, or possibly potentially even never, right?
Correct. Yeah. The whole mechanism of the 1031 is to defer, you know, your real estate gains tax free. And that's what the real true power is. And I'll kind of show you, like, got a little hat. It's all about compounding tax free, if you can see that. It's being able to identify an investor having their ability to meet their investment objectives without losing equity to taxation, just like your example. So in your example, you know, if you had to pay $500,000 and you were on a gain that you had to pay taxes on, essentially you'd have less money to go out and swap into another investment property, right? But if you defer the tax, all of a sudden you're able to buy more property, larger properties, more productive properties. That way you can generate ultimately more cash flow.
And use all of your equity opposed to part of it.
Exactly.
So on that note, that leads me to my next question. What are the primary benefits of participating in a 1031 exchange? Or maybe you just told us.
I mean, I can go over it again. I think that the true power here is, you know, being able to not having to lose any equity to taxation. So, you know, to simply break it down, Daryl, with more money, you can buy larger, multiple, and basically more productive properties. And, you know, a great benefit is as the market changes, you can swap, you know, into different asset classes, you can swap and take advantage into different markets. So really, you know, there's a lot of different things you can do utilizing the 1031 exchange that a lot of people just don't know about.
That makes sense. So are there any what specific types of properties would qualify for a 1031 exchange?
Yeah, so U.S. real estate will qualify as long as it's an investment property. So, you know, just to give you an example, you can exchange raw land into a rental home, you know, you can an apartment complex into a shopping center, or like what we're seeing now is you can diversify from an office building into a bunch of different rental homes. So, you know, there are more than 16 different types of real estate that qualify for 1031 exchanges. And here's the best part, Daryl, is, you know, you are eligible to do a 1031 inside any city or any town in the U.S. as long as it's held for business or investment purposes. And so what we like to say is you have nearly infinite exchange options.
Meaning that you could, for example, sell a property in California and buy something in Maine or in Ohio or wherever.
Correct. Yeah. We're seeing a lot of people will go from California and they'll get more yield in the Southeast, right? Or we're starting to see people go from the Southeast and look at some interesting opportunities in office in, you know, the West Coast. So it's really comes down to how, you know, the 1031 can play into what your investment goals and your objectives are. And the great thing is, you know, a lot of people shift their investments and their criteria and their strategies around once, you know, the market changes, like we've seen in the last, you know, 18 months.
Yeah, with this big increase in values, it's probably even a little bit more opportunity, at least more funds that you can do that. Okay. So how do I identify a potential replacement property? I mean, is it tangible? Yeah. How would I identify a replacement property? I guess it can be anything, like you said. You can sell raw land and buy houses, sell an apartment building and buy an office building.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you got to put in the work to find an asset you want to buy, you know, and then you fill out an ID form by day 45. And there's an old saying that we say over here at 1031 Specialist Daryl is proper planning prevents poor performance. So the point is really is to kind of plan ahead. And, you know, one idea that we share with people to get started is, you know, have your broker just shortlist 10 properties for you, you know, even before during when you put your property on the market. That way, you're not up against the timing risk that comes with the 1031 exchange. So there are different things we advise and definitely different ways which you can, you know, be proactive and plan. And I think that's, you know, just being proactive and getting ahead of it versus just, you know, waiting until the clock ticks down to kind of start your search.
On that note, tell us about the time constraints. What are the rules on that?
Definitely. So when you go to, you know, when you, the clock doesn't start until you close on the sale of the property that you're selling. Okay. So, you know, then you've got 45 days to identify property or properties to meet the ID requirement. And then you've got 180 days to close on the transaction. So, you know, again, one of the things that we say, Daryl, is, you know, when you know you want to list your property, start looking for replacement properties. That way you don't know if your property is going to sell in 2 weeks or if it's going to take 2 months or, you know, as we've seen recently, going to take 6 months to sell. All of a sudden you're adding a lot more time just before those 45 days that are required by the IRS to submit an ID form to start your search.
And explain that ID form. And I think the easy way to identify or to explain that, and correct me if I'm wrong, is just basically saying, hey, here are four potential properties. And can you have more than one?
Yeah, great question. So an ID form is pretty simple. It's just a simple form that a client fills out. 95% of our clients typically fill out, you know, three properties or less being identified. There's a couple other rules that I'll get into in a second. But let's just say, for instance, you know, you're on ID day 10 and you find these properties and you're like, actually, you know, come day 30, I want to identify, you know, three different properties. You can just refill and switch out the ID form. And that's that's pretty consistent across the board. Now, if you identify more than three properties, there's a couple other nuances that I'll get into, which is first, the combined fair market value of more than three properties does not exceed 200% of the value of the property that you're selling. That's known as the 200% rule. And then also, you know, if you do identify, you know, three or more properties and the value exceeds 200% of the property that you're selling, you have to acquire at least 95% of the fair market value of the properties identified in this letter, known as the 95% rule. So, you know, I think most people identify three properties or less, you know, that's typically, but there are rules that I just mentioned that, you know, we can help walk through folks that if they, you know, are going to acquire more than three properties, that we make sure that they're, you know, conform to the, you know, ID period reporting.
So just to put that in for an example purposes, you sell that house in California for $1.5 million, you can go to Michigan and buy three properties for $500,000. Actually, in that scenario, you could sell for, yeah, even $1 million and buy up to $2 million worth of properties. Fair to say?
Correct. Yeah. Yep. Okay. You got it. Exactly.
All right. And then you have 45 days where you have to identify the property. Now tell us this. In fact, this is one of my questions I'm going to skip and jump ahead to, is what happens if you don't identify something in 45 days?
Great question. So let's say for whatever reason, you know, you don't identify something and you know, during your first 45 days, simply put, you get the money and then you're taxed on the amount The way we do it, the way most qualified intermediaries do, you know, do things is, if you don't ID in the first 45 days, you're going to get your money back day 46. Let's say you do ID, ID three properties, and day 135, you're like, hey, Mike, we're actually not going to go through with this. You're going to get your money back day 181. So it's important to note that you're definitely going to get your money back, depending on if you ID or don't ID is when the timing comes into play on when you get your money. But also, you know, you're just going to be taxed like any other, you know, transaction that hasn't utilized a 1031.
So it's pretty strict. You need to identify the property within 45 days, no messing around.
Correct. Yeah. The deadlines are firm regardless if it's a, you know, Saturday, Sunday, or holiday. And that's kind of where we get into, you know, that's where kind of people get into some hot water because they forget like, oh, hey, it's, you know, Columbus Day, or hey, I'm closing on a Sunday. Like maybe it rolls to a Monday. No, I mean, these deadlines are firm, you know, regardless of, those deadlines.
And just to clarify for the audience, you have to just identify three properties. You don't need to close that escrow for, you have 180 days.
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, what we like to say is like, you have to identify three, you know, real contenders. You can't just put a couple different addresses that, you know, you don't have any intention of actually closing on. So, you know, most people close on one property and they have a couple, you know, a backup in a third, right? So it's really important to make sure that, you know, they're real contenders here. And, you know, as part of reporting to the IRS doesn't want you to just make up, you know, addresses just for the sake of making it up.
Sure. That makes perfect sense. Now, it's funny. You said it's taking longer sometimes. I don't know where are you at? What state are you in?
I'm in Denver. We've got a couple offices in California though. Some of my partners are out there. So, you know, we do business in all 50 states, you know, every right. time zone.
Well, and the reason I brought that up is, and I want to touch on another type of exchange, which is the reverse exchange, because it's almost, I've done a few 1031 exchanges, both reverse and let's call it regular. I guess, is that what you call it? Regular exchange and a reverse exchange?
Yeah, we call it like primary, like a forward exchange is when you sell first and then you buy, you know, you identify and you buy later. A reverse, Daryl, is when you buy your property first and then you sell one of your properties within the 180 days. So we like to, we tend to see a lot of well-capitalized folks do that just because, you know, you have to go out and typically, you know, buy that. And also, you know, a lot of family offices do the reverse exchange because they're, you know, very well capitalized and pretty savvy.
Yeah, because especially here where we're at in this current market, and I guess that'll depend a lot on the climate of the market, et cetera, because we're in a kind of a tight market. It's not really it's easier said than done right now with such low inventory. So I am guessing that in a market like this, you would probably be potentially want to consider a reverse exchange more than a forward exchange, as you said, because then you obviously don't have to worry about naming the property, identifying the property, but you're right. Of course, you have to be able to qualify. On that note, I did a 1031 exchange a few years ago. And one thing that surprised me was talk about the loan amount. That surprised the heck out of me. I didn't realize that the loan amount has to be the same between two properties, or how does that part work?
Yeah, definitely. So like you have to, for full tax deferral, you have to have the same proceeds transfer from the property that you're selling to the property that you're buying, right? So, you know, if you're selling a property for $4 million, you know, and you want to make the complete deferred exchange, in let's say you're at 50% loan to value, you have to take out a loan of $2 million and then put $2 million cash into your replacement property to get the full tax deferral. So that's kind of how that works.
And that can that vary? Let's say if you don't hit that total 40%, that full equation, you still get some benefit from doing it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, like we have people who do, you know, partial exchanges. I mean, other people will add more cash, you know, add more value to the replacement property so they can satisfy, you know, the 1031 exchange. There's a lot of different creative scenarios that, you know, people have that we're happy to kind of explore for them, because Daryl, as you know, like every person and every property is so different and specific. So part of our job is just educating people and making sure that they have options so they're best informed to kind of go forward and have a successful outcome.
And I suppose the pros and cons of doing, let's say, the forward, the regular exchange, I guess I'll call it, is Well, you have to identify that property and find that property. If you don't, you're going to be out of luck. And then a reverse exchange is you need to sell your property and make sure, it, of course, that doesn't sell. Well, actually, it's true. So you have, if you do a reverse exchange, you buy the second property first and then go and sell the one that you're 1031 exchanging. Well, you just have to sell it. If you don't sell it, then okay, well, I guess you're just bought yourself a new rental property and you can go on and try to do another 1031 exchange on that property if it doesn't sell. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, that does make sense. You'd basically be saying like, hey, you're not gonna do the reverse. I'm just gonna buy a property with cash regardless, and then I'll potentially just try and do a regular forward exchange and put my property on the market and then identify later. So yeah, there's definitely, you know, ways to kind of, you know, I think the word that I'm looking for is be creative, and there's definitely some safeguards in place, but you know. Most people that do a reverse, I would say that like they're pretty, they plan ahead and they're pretty savvy. So like they either know like, hey, if I'm going to put my property in the market, I'm going to price it to sell versus, you know, what we're seeing right now is a lot of sellers putting stuff on the market and they're like, hey, Daryl, if you don't pay me my number, you know, that's fine with me. Like I've made a lot of money over the past couple of years. So it's a different kind, it's a different type of seller in my opinion.
Okay, then that makes sense. So, and now what about REITs? Can someone, that's a real estate investment trust. For those that don't know, heck, I barely know about them. But what about REITs? Can you sell a house and or whatever and then buy into a real estate investment trust?
Yeah, so no. Well, first no. Like if you're an LP in a private real estate fund or a shareholder in a publicly traded REIT, you won't qualify for a 1031 exchange. There is something called a 721 UPREIT, which is private, which some people can, you know, it's basically they contribute their houses to a private real estate fund for shares in that fund. However, once they're in that fund, they lose their 1031 ability to defer taxes when they come out of the fund. So it's, you know, it's a final destination kind of for your deferred tax journey. And a lot of folks, you know, after they come out of the fund, you know, will be taxed on their gain.
And then that leads me to another question. How many 1031s can you do with the, let's say, starting off with the same property and moving on? And do you have to wait a certain period of time? Like every 2 years, you can do an infinite number of exchanges as long as it's 2 years? Or how does that work?
Yeah. So, you know, from the timing generally, you know, every 2 years, you know, there's no hard and fast safe rule. But the great thing about doing a 1031 exchange, Daryl, is that there's no limit to the amount of times you can 1031. And frankly speaking, that's why the 1031 grandmasters and just keep exchanging. So, you know, while we're alive, you know, a 1031 allows us to buy more property with a higher basis, benefit from more bonus depreciation, you know, generate more cash flow. And then, you know, when we go on to pass, our kids will inherit our portfolio. They'll get a step up in basis and they won't pay a dime on the lifetime appreciation that, you know, we made happen. And so they will avoid the taxes altogether, which is really interesting. And a lot of people think like, hey, you know, eventually I have to swap. And even if I'm older, I have to swap out and, you know, pay taxes. Well, no, that's really not the case. You know, you could, you know, once your kids inherit it, you know, they won't pay a dime in tax.
Well, that's a huge benefit, especially for your kids.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. And then can you do a tax deferred? So you can do a tax deferred exchange on a vacation home or a second home or no? Because how's that work?
Yeah. So, you know, what we like to say with like a second home or vacation home, like that generally implies personal use in our opinion. And if you use a property for more than 14 days out of the year, it's no longer an investment property. It's a personal use property. And personal use properties don't really qualify for 1031 exchanges.
All right. That's a real important note. So what's the role of a qualified intermediary in a 1031 exchange? And why is that necessary? And tell me this, is that the same as an accommodator? That's the same thing.
Yeah, a qualified intermediary and an accommodator are interchangeable. It's interesting that, you know, West Coast typically likes to say accommodator and a lot of other folks like to say qualified intermediary. But to answer your question, Daryl, a qualified intermediary like 1031 specialist is an independent third party required by the IRS to facilitate 1031 exchanges. And, you know, a QI does three primary things. Well, first, they consult with the client before, during, you know, before and during an exchange. And second, they prepare exchange docs to ensure that transaction conforms to Section 1031 of the tax code. And finally, they protect and direct a client's funds during the exchange period.
And I think it's really important to note too that one can't, when one's selling their house, their rental, and doing this, they literally, it's extremely important. You have to have a QI or accommodator, because if you touch, you can't touch that money whatsoever. It can't hit your account for an hour and then you deposit it somewhere else, or else, boom, it prevents you from doing a 1031 exchange, right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. Like that is one of the most important things, Daryl. An investor cannot take constructive receipt of their funds even for a second. So the second the funds hit their bank account, the exchange will fail and they're no longer eligible, you know, for the 1031 tax benefit. So what we always tell people is, you know, engage your QI, you know, right as you're planning to, you know, put your property on the market, so we can kind of stay in touch and monitor when you go under contract and go under escrow. Because if you close and take constructive receipt of the funds, you're not going to be able to utilize, you know, a 1031 tax deferred exchange.
So to get specific, what one would do would be close escrow on their house, and then the funds would be wired directly to you or to an accommodator or QI.
Yeah, actually, like, we don't hold the funds at all. So this is the way, okay, you know, our process works. So we come in, the funds get directed to our partner bank in a segregated trust account in the client's name, where the funds will sit for the duration of the exchange. When it's time to close on the replacement property, Daryl, we'll instruct the partner bank to wire those funds to the seller of the replacement property, thus completing the 1031 exchange transaction. So we're not the bank. We don't hold the funds. What we like to say is we're the facilitator. So a lot of people are like, oh, like, are you guys holding the funds? We're like, no, we're just directing everything and making sure everything's compliant and making sure everything is safe and secure.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. All right. So can people 1031 exchange out a property held in title holding trust and acquire a replacement property?
Yeah, generally speaking, Daryl, any taxpaying entity can do a 1031 exchange. The IRS has a same taxpayer requirement for tax tracking. So if the same person or entity is exchanging, it's pretty easy. If not, you know, we'll recommend bringing in our structuring attorney to ensure the right steps are taken to maintain eligibility.
Let's qualify entities. That would be an LLC, obviously a single person, anything in a trust.
Yeah, an LLC, a partnership. I mean, there, you know, a lot of people, you know, will have partnerships with multiple partners, right? You know, typically we see a lot of LLCs with a lot of different members, just because they all like to kind of be, you know, in a deal together. And probably, you know, what I should address is, you know, and the question that I get all the time is, can some members of the LLC do their own exchange or cash out at the time of the sale of the property? And the answer is yes. So the way that works is it's called the drop and swap. And that allows investors to drop out of their current ownership structure, break away kind of from their partners to buy a property on their own. And, you know, just like I mentioned before, it's really important to get an attorney involved, particularly in a state like California, before you sign a purchase and sale agreement to make sure the structure is all intact. That way, if people want to go their separate ways, you know, they're set up in a way where the IRS, you know, qualifies them to be able to do a 1031 exchange.
But they can do it. So let me and a partner, and we sell a place for $1 million. They can go buy something for 500. I go buy something for 500 and we've satisfied the exchange. I mean, that's a brief overview.
Exactly. But you'll have to have an attorney make some revisions to kind of the, you know, the LLC agreement before you have a purchase and sale on the property that you're selling, which is really, really important to make sure that you guys will be able to go on and go your separate ways.
To have it reviewed. So how about this? And not to get too much into the weeds and details, obviously at one point it's probably best for someone to just go ahead and specifically talk to you in person or on the phone. If let's say, I won't do too many of these if questions, but if there's five, let's say there's five people in an LLC, five buddies from college form an LLC, they buy a rental and it's gone up to whatever, doesn't matter, $1 million now. And one of them says, you know, I just, you know, I'm kind of done with this. So I want to get out. Can the four can stay together and one can get out and maybe just not, how does that work? Or am I making sense at all?
Yeah, definitely. We have people, you know, we structure, you know, you'd, you know, I'm not an attorney, but typically how attorneys would structure this is, you know, they restructure the partnership and essentially, you know, like I mentioned before, the people would, you know, buy out a member, which is totally doable, and their interest could be, you know, used as 1031 to go on and buy something else. But again, like it's all about structuring with a specific real estate attorney, and we have a ton that, you know, we can recommend, but it's definitely doable.
Okay. That's probably the good and the best answer because there's too many details that you're going to need to know, I'm guessing.
Totally.
So are there any tax implications or obligations during the 1031 exchange? If so, how does that affect any capital gains taxes?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we're not CPAs, so we can't really give specific tax advice, but I'll just say, you know, that any investor that sells a property is subject to as many as four different types of tax. So first, you're going to have your federal capital gains tax. That's going to be anywhere from, call it 15 to 20%. Then you're going to have the state tax, varies from 0% in Florida to around 13.3% in California, as I'm sure you're aware of, Daryl. Mm, yeah. And then you've got, bummer. Then you've got the net investment income tax, which is around, you know, hovering around 4%. And finally, you have the depreciation recapture tax, which is 25% of what you depreciated. And again, these can all be deferred in a 1031 exchange.
Speaking of depreciation, that's one thing that I was also, I just hadn't realized it, frankly, was I was thinking that one could start over the entire 1030 or the depreciation schedule, but you don't.
No.
Okay.
No.
Provide an example of a situation where the 1031 exchange can be particularly advantageous for a real estate investor.
Yeah, definitely. So I think over the past, call it 3 years in the COVID era, a lot of folks have, you know, not returned to work, and a lot of office properties, as I'm sure you guys are aware of, have suffered. And we worked with a group. They had a nice Class A office building in one of the major metros, and they swapped into a great multifamily portfolio in the Southeast, and were able to kind of replace and defer taxes and make sure that, you know, they got the full tax deferral. And why that's important is as we start to, you know, head into 2024 is, you know, there's a lot of different asset classes that have, you know, been hot and have been cold, and a lot of different areas of the country where you can, you know, basically buy and place some bets where, you know, there may be more population growth like we've seen happen, or there may be better opportunities. So, you know, it's really, a 1031 is really advantageous for investors, Daryl, just because like they can swap in and out of different assets, in and out of different towns. They can go from one property to multiple properties, or go from one property, you know, and spread it out across, you know, a bunch of properties, right? So there's a lot of benefit there.
And is there a limit? So, I mean, if someone was blessed enough to, let's say, make $50 million on something, there's no limit.
There's no limit at all. I mean, we've done, you know, 9-figure exchanges with very well capitalized people. And you'll be amazed that those guys have started earlier in their career with one property and then just kept swapping and trading up and trading up and trading up. And, you know, just have had great luck utilizing the 1031 as a tool to kind of, you know, defer taxes and compound their gains.
And you mentioned this earlier, so you may have already answered it, but I want to just confirm. One has to buy in the United States, though. They can't go and buy in Costa Rica or whatever.
Yeah, they have to buy. They have to be U.S. U.S. property, you know, all throughout the U.S. I mean, Puerto Rico, you can't do that in Puerto Rico. There are, you know, some territories where you can 1031 in and out of in the Caribbean, but mainly any, you know, any of the 50 states, you know, are fair play. And, you know, we see people, you know, go from Hawaii to, you know, to Indiana. You know, we just helped a client, you know, last week, you know, do that. So people are always moving around, and, you know, as long as it's held in the U.S., it's fair game.
All right. Oh, now, so anything changed in the last few years? I know, are there any new laws that have changed?
Yeah, I mean, from our standpoint, no. There's always things on the ballot threatening that the 1031 may be, you know, on its way out. But, you know, we believe nothing has changed. I mean, besides in 2017 with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which no longer allows personal property. Now it's just, you know, that now it's real estate. We believe that 1031s are going to be around, you know, as long as, you know, we're around. So nothing material has changed lately.
Yeah, I get that a lot with primary residents and they're, because they've heard whispers of disability and everything. Well, no, it can't be your primary residence. You can't live there. So
gotta be investment.
Yeah. Okay. So can you recommend any resources or professionals who can assist individuals in successfully navigating a 1031 exchange? I'm guessing, first of all, that's you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, that is what we do. We focus on 1031 exchanges for clients all, you know, throughout the 50 states. And that's what we do full time. But we've got a ton of great resources for you guys on our website. We've got, you know, if you want to run a specific scenario, we've got the best 1031 exchange calculator out there. You can calculate your capital gains, understand your specific tax exposure, and run scenario analysis on different 1031 replacement properties. And, you know, we've got something, Daryl, called our ebook. It's our 1031 Bible. Literally, it's everything you need to know about 1031s. We've simplified it. We've packaged it really nicely together. And it's, you know, really 98% of anything that you need to know. And that's, of course, you know, if you've got a specific exchange question or ready to do a 1031, you can email me. I'm Mike@1031specialist.com, or give us a call, 638-431-1031.
Awesome. I was going to ask you for your information. So that booklet or that site, is that something you want to have people go to now and give that out, or just have them contact you?
Yeah, I mean, it's on our website. It's under our About Us. They can download it. They can fill out a little form. They can download it. They'll have it immediately. Or if they feel free, you know, feel more comfortable just giving me a, you know, giving us a call or emailing, like, we could send it right over to you.
All right. And then I think we're near the end. Is there anything that I've asked that I should have that you would think would be important?
I think, just to tell most folks, like, 95% of what we do is educate. And what we're really trying to do here, Daryl, is, you know, we believe that all real estate transactions, in terms of investment real estate transactions, 10 to 15% maybe utilize the 1031 exchange. And our whole goal is, we want to make people aware that they're able to use this as an effective tool to generate more income and more wealth for them. And, you know, we'd love to talk to anyone who's and be a resource for people that has those questions. And no question is a dumb question, as we like to say. And, you know, we're happy to kind of, you know, hold someone's hand and walk them through and get them educated.
I'm reminded of a good friend of mine I've known forever. He's an attorney. He's got more degrees than a thermometer. He's so bright. And it's funny. And I said, well, pertaining to what you just said, there's no such thing as a dumb question. He says, yeah, there's no such thing as a dumb question. There's just dumb people. I go, oh, okay. Thanks, Tom. Anyway, so one last question. And what are the negative effects? I thought of one potentially negative possible effect. In fact, I just was talking to someone about this. And the only possible negative, well, not the only, but you can answer this after I answer my own question, but is property taxes could go up. So especially in California, someone buys something 30 years ago and does something and their taxes were $300 a month. Well, that property tax is going to go a lot higher. So other than that, are there any other things that people should be looking for or be aware of as a negative aspect?
Not really. I think, you know, I always just say, like, hey, like, proper planning, right? We talked about planning. Like, it's super important in terms of a 1031 to get a qualified intermediary involved, like, right, you know, right away. And just remember the deadlines, right? Like, the deadlines of making sure that, you know, you're aware of their firm, regardless if they, you know, fall on a Saturday, Sunday, or holiday. And again, we're here to kind of help remind you of those deadlines. So, you know, you have a good team with you, but I would say those things, you know, would help make sure that you have a successful outcome in your transaction.
Oh, wow. Well, this has just been fantastic. I've learned a lot. Hopefully our audience has learned a lot. And let's go ahead and end this with one more thing. Just go ahead and repeat how to get a hold of you in case anybody wants to talk to Mike personally or his firm. And you have to have an intermediary to do this. So it's a necessity.
Yeah, definitely. So my email, I'm Mike@1031specialist.com. Our phone number is 631-438-1031. You know, we've got a Twitter account, Mr. 1031, if you want to follow us. We post a lot of cool active stuff. We're on Instagram, we're on LinkedIn, we're on Facebook. And, you know, if you want to get in touch with us in any of those ways, we're happy to kind of, you know, speak with you and answer your questions.
That's great. Mike Auerbach, I'm so grateful for you joining us today and enlightening the public to what a 1031 exchange is, and just so grateful. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Daryl. Happy to being here and a pleasure being on the Jones Zone.
All right. Well, hey, signing off. And hey, If you like this episode, please give us a review and please subscribe to our YouTube channel and or our podcast channel on Spotify or Apple. And again, thanks for listening and stay tuned for our next show coming up very soon. So thanks again, Mike. Have a good one. See ya.
Thanks for tuning into the Jones Zone, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. If you found this information and insights shared in today's episode valuable, be sure to head over to iTunes to rate the show, leave a review, and subscribe so that you don't miss another episode. Remember, when it comes to real estate, knowledge is power. Stay informed and stay ahead of the game with us. I'll be back next week with even more expert advice and industry insights. Don't miss it. Thank you.